Thanks for being with us today, Susan. You're a volunteer with Radio Algiers. We've given our listeners a little bit of the background of the situation in New Orleans, Louisiana, where you're operating. Tell us a little bit about the radio station itself. What types of broadcasts are you making? How are you able to serve the community there?
Well, we've been broadcasting as part of a relief center based at Common Ground, which is a relief organization that that started up as a grassroots effort ad hoc after the hurricane in New Orleans to provide food for people, to provide medical aid. We have a clinic, we have distribution center, we have volunteers who are tarping roofs. We cleaned out all of the storm drains, basically doing things that the government should have been doing but wasn't and still isn't in the city of New Orleans. And what the radio was doing and will be doing again shortly as soon as we get back on the air was providing emergency information for folks, telling people where they can get medical aid, where they can get supplies, how to clean their home safely, what kind of precautions they should take in certain areas of the city as far as masks that people should be wearing and safety equipment that they should have. We also provided a forum for people to be able to air their grievances on various issues. And people, many people came and told their stories about surviving the post-hurricane flooding of New Orleans, which was a separate event from the hurricane and needs to be kept separate because it was a human-made flood that actually caused so much devastation for the people of New Orleans. So people were able to speak freely about that and to speak about a number of other issues. Most recently, the eviction issue has been a big one, where people have come and told about their issues and the problem of eviction that's going on citywide, where thousands of people are receiving eviction notices in New Orleans area, despite the fact that many people are not here to begin with to receive the notices and don't have transportation back here from where they are, even if they want to come, which many do. And secondarily, people are receiving eviction notices that are not legitimate. Notices that say they haven't paid their rent when they have. Notices that say their homes are not livable when they are. And the like, because property values, as you may know, are going up in New Orleans right now. And in fact, they are skyrocketing. While developers are having a heyday in taking over many of these properties in order to put in high-priced condos, casinos, and similar things, the people who are moderate or low income are being pushed out. So we were able to provide a forum for many of those people and also to then provide them with the information through our public service announcements of legal aid that was available and the newly formed New Orleans Legal Action Workers and the New Orleans Housing Emergency Action Team, No Law and No Heat, to help people with their legal issues and to tell them about when the free legal clinic was taking place and the free legal aid lawyers would be available to them. So so both on an informational level and on a level of having a forum for people to talk and to share their stories, it was providing pretty valuable resource for this community because none of the other stations were providing that. In fact, and I want to point this out because I think it's going to be a model in future emergency situations. What happened soon after the hurricane and then the flood in New Orleans, there was a group formed called Radio United, which was headed by Clear Channel, that basically took over the entire FM band, and there were, I think, about 8 different stations that gave over their frequency to this corporate conglomerate.
Sort of a collaboration, right?
And combination of corporations that were able to then broadcast the same thing on many of these stations, and it was, for the most part, not very helpful information. It was a lot of praising of FEMA and the work that FEMA was doing, a lot of apology or apologistic kind of a talk that, well, FEMA is doing the best that they can, Red Cross is doing the best that they can. Only value of those of the broadcast that I could see was call-ins. People would call in extremely angry and upset, and you know, would speak for a few minutes before getting cut off. But the call-ins were great. Other than that, it was a pretty straightforward commercial broadcast, and that was what was made available to the people of New Orleans, not just on one station, but I need to reiterate this, that it was taking over of the FM band, that virtually every station that you could hear on the FM band during that time of emergency was this Clear Channel conglomerate and their allies.
And how has Radio Algiers basically been different from that corporate conglomerate?
Well, as I have just described, our content, it's completely different. It's in fact the opposite of what the Clear Channel Radio United was attempting to do. Instead of apologizing for FEMA or trying to justify their lack of readiness and their absence in New Orleans, the radio was providing a forum for people who were able to tell it like it really was and is, that these were stories that that the mainstream media would prefer to be silenced, but we're allowing a forum for the unheard voices to be heard.
So you're operating at 88.7 FM. How big is the transmitter? What's your range? How many listeners potentially do you have?
Well, when we first began, we had a 100-watt transmitter, and we're able to reach the whole city of New Orleans, which lasted a couple of weeks until a power surge blew out the transmitter. Always have your uninterruptible power supply on, folks. Power surge blew up that transmitter, so we were broadcasting at with a 40 watt after that. The 40 watt was able to get us across the French Quarter, the 9th Ward, the 8th Ward, and 7th Ward, as well as all of Algiers and some of Gretna. We did get a good chunk of the city with that.
Was this on 24/7? And, was it primarily produced by people who have come to New Orleans to help in the relief effort, or was it actually people from the community that were returning? Were those people, are those people actually involved in the operation?
Well, the operation was run out of the relief center that is Common Ground, which is a relief center run out of the home of Malik Rahim, who is a Black Panther and a local activist, who has been an integral part of the building of this, and also is himself a Katrina survivor, along with a number of people that he worked with previously, have been a part of this. Other than that, a lot of volunteers coming in from all over the country have been extremely helpful in getting interviews, producing content, making the equipment work, and all of that. For the future, we are going to be working with the Tulane University radio station and broadcasting a lot of the same content, but with the college radio station that is now going back online. Their studio was damaged by the flood, but now they are able to go back on the air and are going to be working with us.
I want to remind listeners, you're tuned to 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is the Indie Newswire program. My name is V-Man, sitting here with DJ Bradley, and we are speaking with Susan, a volunteer journalist and programmer from Radio Algiers, operating at 88.7 FM on the West Bank of the Mississippi in New Orleans, Louisiana. They were visited on November 2nd by the Federal Communications Commission, and Susan, I wanted you to describe what that situation was like.
Well, it was the New Orleans Police Department, accompanied by a technician and an engineer and someone from the Enforcement Division of the Federal Communications Division, Federal Communications Commission, the local chapter. They were extremely belligerent, saying that they were going to come in and seize everything that we had. Of course, remember this is a relief center, and so it's extremely frightening to people who, having had the experiences that they did with the local police after the hurricane, who are coming here to get supplies to see officers coming in that way. They did threaten to seize equipment, but they did not have any orders or any search warrant to do so. So they were asked to leave.
So they were denied entry. How many officers were present from the NOPD, and how many FCC agents?
It was four NOPD officers, who, by the way, were wearing New York Police Department hats. But were New Orleans Police Department officers by their uniform. And, well, you may know that many, many federal agencies and various police departments from around the country have come down here for this law enforcement party, post-Katrina in New Orleans, with the promise that they would be able to shoot someone, according to, prison officials, who spoke, anonymously. to people who were arrested, saying that this was a free for all for cops from around the country to come down here. So you'll often see New Orleans Police Department officers with other uniforms on or parts of other uniforms on. One that they especially love is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement that says ICE, and on the jackets it says ICE in big letters, and so you'll see police of various stripes and departments wearing ICE uniforms, who aren't necessarily with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So four of them and two gentlemen from the FCC. But it's not the first time that the New Orleans Police Department have visited. They actually arrested a young volunteer in September, in a pretty brutal manner, with about 20 police officers kicking in and beating the 16-year-old who was a local volunteer, and taking him to the Greyhound station, which was temporarily prison. So the police, you may have heard about the beating of a 65-year-old man several weeks ago. That's not uncommon. It's one of many instances of the police being extremely brutal, especially to black and brown people in New Orleans after the hurricane. It's been a free-for-all for many police officers to brutalize, especially young black men.
Tell me more about the radio station now that there's been a visit. So you're not on the air currently, is that right?
Right. We're not on the air currently, but we should be working with Tulane University and back up on the air in conjunction with them within a few days.
Now, I understand there are federal laws that state that it's basically in a state of martial law and in a state of emergency, you don't need a license to broadcast if you're providing emergency life-saving information such as you are with Radio Algiers. Can you comment on that? Do you have any idea?
Well, that is what we were doing, and We actually did speak to the FCC about it and asked them about the possibility of getting a temporary license, which was done in Houston by a group of people who are trying to broadcast into the Astrodome the needed information for the people there. So we were told that that we would not be able to get an emergency license like that for New Orleans, because what the people are facing in New Orleans is not an emergency, and that's what we were told. So wow. So we weren't able to get any license like that, but I do know of that provision, and I suppose that it could be a lawsuit where we to try to pursue it.
Given that,
because we are still under a state of emergency.
Indeed, given that there's been a visit now, and there's been a threat to possibly have further, you know, possibly seizure action or some sort of shutdown of the radio station. Do you have plans to return to the airwaves? Given, you know, given the dire situation that people are facing, it seems really an urgent task, in other words, to get news and information out to people. I'm wondering if this will be able to be re-sparked, if there will be another attempt to broadcast, maybe from a different location, or I don't want you to get too specific in terms of your tactics, but I'm just curious if you have plans to return.
Our plan is to work with Tulane University and broadcast in conjunction with them, and providing the same information and the same community content, and hopefully that will start within within just a few days. And it's 91.5 FM, and that their transmitter is a pretty strong transmitter that people have said they can hear all the way to Mississippi. So we will be working with them and creating community based content out of this college radio station, WTUL.
What do you see as the advantages of that, other than, I mean, my question really is, why can't the two projects happen simultaneously?
Well, first of all, there aren't enough people to staff two stations. There are barely enough for one, and because of that, we are going to try and work together to put the content out, and hopefully really turn WTUL into a community radio station, which they have. There have been attempts to do that before the hurricane, but again, as a college station, it kind of ebbs and flows with the flow of students. The students are not in town. Tulane University is temporarily having classes in Houston, so they are not in town, and will be back. They will be back in town in January, and hopefully at that point, many of the students who are involved will be able to work in conjunction with us and see the advantages of having a community radio station, and you know, see all of the advantages that provides for the community. This is something that New Orleans has been lacking.
Indeed.
Even prior to the hurricane.
To what degree, besides media making, are you involved with the relief efforts? And you were talking a bit about some of the racial dynamics with the displacement of mainly poor black folks throughout New Orleans, and, you know, this whole basically gentrification program that seems to be taking shape there. Maybe talk a little more about how, you know, grassroots relief can provide people with hope, you know, to rebuild their community to some degree to what it was before.
It's not just in New Orleans that this process of gentrification is taking place. There's a housing crisis throughout the United States. It's just here that we see it in a hyper-concentrated form right now, where the city is abandoned for the most part. People are trickling back, but developers are taking advantage of of the absence of many renters to really go after a plan that they had had in place before and had in their minds to do before and had tried in different ways to do, which is a massive gentrification and a disempowerment of the black community of New Orleans. As you might know, New Orleans is, I would say, the oldest black city in this country. It is a city where in the early 1800s, Louisiana passed a law banning black people from owning white people because there were so many successful businessmen, black businessmen in New Orleans that were free black people who had established a base in this city and really provided a free black community in the Deep South that that was to be found nowhere else. And this is one of many attempts historically to disempower that spirit of black New Orleans and to basically kill off black New Orleans. And the people of New Orleans have today and prior to today risen up and said, no, black New Orleans will not be killed. In today's action, there was a march to Gretna, which was organized in part by the People's Hurricane Relief Fund and was part of many, many groups, including the Hip Hop Caucus and the local Nation of Islam, who marched from the convention center across the Gretna Bridge into Gretna. Now, that bridge is where many people who were stuck at the convention center and at the Superdome tried to cross in the week following the hurricane and during the flood. We're trying to cross into safety out of the floodwaters, but were turned back by the Gretna police who had guns and dogs blocking their way across that bridge. And so today marked a turning point where the many groups that came together were able to cross the bridge, even though the police had said it would not be allowed. The groups asserted that if they were not allowed, they would be arrested, and were able to cross the bridge. Representative Cynthia McKinney was also a part of that march, and a advocate in Congress, probably the only advocate in Congress for the minority population of New Orleans that is desperately trying to come back home and to stay home and to rebuild New Orleans in a way that is not corporate, that's not based on making a lot of money off of tourism and gambling, but it's based on the traditional values of New Orleans, black self-empowerment, the traditions of art and music, and the beautiful culture of New Orleans. Now, the city government and the federal government obviously do not want to see that happen, but the people of New Orleans have stood and said that that they will make that happen regardless of what obstacles are put in their place. One of the things that we've done is to help fight evictions, and we have had two victories, and we're two for two in the housing complexes that we've taken on. Both of them have been housing complexes where the management has tried to evict everyone with a wholesale eviction, and by fighting them with a media campaign, having press conferences, having protests and rallies, in one case a takeover by residents of the management office, and various other techniques, those two housing complexes have been won. The tenants are not being evicted, and so we're moving to fight for other housing complexes as well throughout the city. And so that's just one of many things. You asked, as far as the relief effort, we just opened in the Ninth Ward a supply center, a distribution center for cleaning supplies, food, water, tools to be lent, a clinic, and a legal aid clinic that's happening once a week, so people are able to get the help that they need to help rebuild their homes and to support whatever claims they have legally, whether it's insurance issues, bankruptcy issues, unemployment issues, or eviction issues. All of those are things that the lawyers, the volunteer lawyers that are working with us are taking on.
I understand that there's still parts of the Ninth Ward, other parts of New Orleans that are still without power, without general services. There's still trash piled up on the streets, a rotten stench in the air. Can you give us just a sense of, you know, what the situation is still like on the ground? We hear a lot of, you know, like, depending on what kind of media you read, you hear glowing reports in the corporate media about how things are progressing and things are starting to open up again, businesses are reopening, etc. But then I read and hear independent sources say a different story. You're there on the ground. Just give us an idea.
As you said, I mean, there's a huge disparity between the rich white part of town, the poor black part of town. So in Metairie and in Uptown and in the Garden District, there's power. It's clean. There is electricity. There's internet. There's stores open. But if you go to the Ninth Ward, where our distribution center is, as you said, the streets are full of trash. Refrigerators are, refrigerators that have been left for a couple of months, you might guess, are extremely noxious in their toxicity and their fumes. There are cars overturned. There are still boats in the street. There is a huge military and police presence. They come out every night patrolling the streets. The streets are dark because there is no power. And you'll see soldiers in Hummers and in armed personnel carriers standing out of the top of the armed personnel carriers with their M16s, looking around in a fearful way as if they're in Iraq. And many of them have just gotten back from Iraq and are now here, and shooting sometimes at people, and at the very least arresting anyone that they see on the street. So you have just huge number of unlawful arrests. Anyone who's in the Ninth Ward, even if you're sitting on the porch of your home, people have been arrested for that. So anyone that they see is subject to arrest, there is no cleaning of the streets going on, and there seems to be no attempt to clean the streets. In the lower Ninth Ward, there is bulldozing going on, and a lot of those areas, the people who own or rent those homes, who live in those homes, have not even been able to come back to see those homes, but yet they're being bulldozed. They haven't been able to see what the damage is to their home and what can be salvaged, and yet their homes are being bulldozed. So that is going on at the same time that the French Quarter and the Garden District are back, and tourists are being encouraged to come back. And at the same time, the levees have not been rebuilt. And engineers from Amsterdam have been denied access, who, as you know, have built dikes around their city of Amsterdam and very effectively. In fact, the investigation as to why the levees broke was impeded by the Army Corps of Engineers, who refused to even give out information about the levees to the investigators, the federal investigators. So the Army Corps of Engineers has stopped the investigation at every turn, and the levees are not being rebuilt. If another hurricane were to hit in this season, which, by the way, goes on until the end of November, the Ninth Ward would flood again, and Lakeview and East New Orleans would flood again because the levees have not been fixed. And there has been talk of different rebuilding plans and different ways of dealing with the fact that New Orleans is below sea level. And one of them is the Rebuild Green Coalition, rebuildgreen.org, which is an attempt to bring back the wetlands, which is the protection for the city of New Orleans and for the Gulf Coast. As long as the wetlands continue to be eroded, this area will be under threat from the growing and increasing in severity hurricanes that have been hitting this coast.
We've been speaking with Susan. She's a volunteer with Radio Algiers, also working with Common Ground. The website commongroundrelief.org is the way to get more information about that. Susan, I'm wondering if you can just leave us with some idea of how listeners here can plug into the relief effort. What is the best thing for people outside of the area to be doing right now to help, to help the residents, the people from New Orleans rebuild there?
Well, actually, we're organizing a road trip for relief November 20th to the 27th, and people can come and organize from your area. There are a lot of different groups organizing to come down here. We're hoping to get at least 300 volunteers from around the country to help rebuild and clean in the Ninth Ward. We have many, many people who have requested help. We don't have the volunteers to fill that need. And we're hoping for skill shares as well. People who have skills in the construction trades and in decontamination. People who are environmental engineers to provide training for local residents to build a work cooperative that will be the part of the rebuilding effort so that people can be a part of the ownership of their own firm that is based on a livable wage, a fair wage, and a sharing of any profit. So that is for November 20th to 27th, and you can find information on the website commongroundrelief.org. So that's one of the best ways. If you can donate any equipment or any money, you can go to that website as well and find out how to do that.
Really appreciate your time out from your busy schedule down there in New Orleans, Louisiana, Susan, and hope to hear more from you in the near future. And maybe one of us or people from Santa Cruz will be headed that way shortly as part of that road trip for relief. Again, you can find more information about that at commongroundrelief.org. I appreciate your time today, Susan.
All right. No problem.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.